This is your afternoon Wilt show that we call variously Connect the Dots or Wake Up Call. We're going to give you a little bit of startup music from some guy named Billy Bragg. I understand he's kind of well thought of. So here we go.
There is power in a pine tree, power in the lines. There is power in a pine tree, power in the lines, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand. There is power in a union. Now the lessons of the past were all learned with workers' blood. The mistakes of the bosses we must pay for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. War has always been the boss's way, sir. The union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, all workers unite. With our brothers and our sisters, together we will stand. There is power in a union. Now I long for the morning that they realize brutality and unjust laws cannot defeat us. Who'll defend the workers who cannot organize when the bosses send their lackeys out to cheat us? Money speaks for money, the devil for his own. Who comes to speak for the skin and the bone? What a comfort to the widow, a light to the child. There is power in a union. The union forever defending our rights. Down with the blackleg, all workers unite. With our brothers and our sisters, together we will stand. There is power in a union.
And we're back. This is Dick Paddock, your host for Wilt's Wake Up Call, Connect the Dots. And I'm here with Lori Hoyt, who's also a host, our co-host, and she'll introduce our guests.
Good afternoon. We're here every Wednesday afternoon,
by the way, from 5 to 6 o'clock, and we're so glad you're listening. If you are having a little bit of static, this is a low-power station. You can stream us through your computer on...
Go to wcomfm.org. And select the button on the right-hand side that says Listen Live or something to that effect. And whatever's on WCOM at the time going out over the air will also stream into your computer.
Okay, sounds
good. Which right now, of course, is us.
Which is us. Yes, we're so happy to have our guest today. Tried last spring, and it was getting towards the end of the school year. And our guest is Greg Meyer, who is... Your title is what, the coordinator?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
For the Blue Ribbon Mentor Program.
That's
at
right.
Chapel Hill High.
At the Chapel Hill schools. Yep.
Oh, the
entire
schools.
School system.
And high schools. And we've had Lori Clark on from your program mm-hmm. last year, and it's such a wonderful program. So I want you to tell us about it, but also just to let our listeners know that you have brought a guest who is one of your mentors.
Absolutely.
Laverne Manzano. Hello, Laverne.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so glad you're able to come. So we'll start off with Greg telling essentially what the program is about, because I don't think people know, because it's much more than I ever thought it was. But go ahead, Greg.
Sure. Well, Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate is one of the programs operated by the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools to try and address the challenges of the minority achievement gap. And we have two main programs. Our mentoring program, the Mentor Advocate Program, identify students in fourth grade who we think have some untapped potential, and we work with those students from fourth grade all the way through college. And in 16 years, we've sent 100% of our graduates on to post-secondary education. So we know that if we have a mentor for that child, we can send that child to college.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I remember quite a bit, but I did not remember that how tremendously effective the statistics even prove what you're doing. So you start out, and I didn't realize it was that young. So you start as young. Well, fourth grade is a great time to get, and the younger the better.
Yeah, about 10 years old. Yeah. And Laverne started with a 10-year-old about a year and a half ago?
Actually, I met her. She was a fourth grader.
Yeah.
So she's now a sixth grader that's attending Smith Middle School, and it's been a phenomenal relationship. I really enjoy her. She enjoys me, and she looks forward to me. From what I understand from her mother, sometimes she cries when she don't see Miss Laverne. So it's just really rewarding, and it gives me an opportunity to give back to the program that has been so instrumental in helping my kids throughout their high school years.
So your kids were part of the program?
They were a part of the Youth Leadership Institute, which is another branch of the Blue Ribbon. Once they get past a certain grade level, I'm not sure what that is, but in high school, the Wildlife Group picks them up. That's the group that's facilitated by Lori Clark.
Okay, that's one I was more familiar with. Okay.
Yeah. So she gets them in the ninth grade and follows them all throughout high school. And in my case, you know, Greg has, my son adores Greg, so my son even now keeps up with Greg. And matter of fact, Greg took a group of Wildlife kids to Georgia, and my son now lives in Georgia, and he met them and gave them a talk about Wildlife and how it's helped his career as far as leadership skills. My daughter, she also followed in my son's footsteps, and she attached herself to Lori Clark.
Uh-huh. So I've been wonderful fortunate. People to get attached
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. I've been very fortunate. They have really, really been a tremendous support for my kids. And even after they're out of college and on their own, they still, you know, my son Eric still contact Greg. My daughter, she still do stuff with Blue Ribbon. She does assist them with the Wildlife Camps, so she helps coordinate those camps in the summer.
The Wildlife is the Youth Leadership.
The Youth right. Leadership.
The Youth Leadership Institute, YLI.
Okay, so that's the little affectionate short.
Yep.
Okay. So both, wow, listen to the thunder. I don't know if they hear this over the radio or not.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yes, they do. So both your kids and your son is living in Georgia now, and so you took a group of kids to Georgia, Greg?
Well, in our Youth Leadership Institute, those students are high school students. Any student in the high school who wants to participate can. And those students learn leadership skills at a summer camp, and that's the camp that Laverne's daughter, Gina, helps us run. She's our assistant camp director.
Wow.
And then during the school year, they take their leadership skills and they implement service projects in the local community. So the last weekend, we had a service project at Hope Gardens. We're doing some work with the Rogers Eubanks Neighborhood Association coming up. We do all kinds of service projects. The kids who do the most, show the most leadership during the school year in the service projects are invited to come with us on an alternative spring break trip. And we call it an alternative spring break because we take them to do college tours, service projects, and cultural enrichment activities. So last year we went to Atlanta. We did several service projects. We went to the King Center. We toured Clemson University. We toured Morehouse University and Spelman University. But one of the things that we did while we were down there was we called up Eric and had him come over and talk to the kids, as Laverne said. And it was great because Eric's, what, 26 years old now?
Yes.
26. And
you
so,
have a child that old, Laverne.
I do.
Yeah. you have a face that's better than radio.
It's too bad people can't see this beautiful woman. Like, anyhow, so your son is 26 and working in
Atlanta. He's a commercial route manager for waste management down there.
Oh, great.
So he told our young people how he has to manage a lot of men who work under him who are 20 or 30 years older than him. And he said, now how do you think I get people that are that much older than me to respect me and listen to me? And he described how he uses the same leadership skills that we teach the student, the same model that we teach them in high school, to be able to manage these guys. It was fantastic.
That I mean, and that must mean so much to the kids to see somebody who's been through the program and how successful they are and what it's meant to them, that they still want to give back and share some of what they got from the program with these young people. That is so powerful, you know, more than any good talk that any one person can do. So this program seems to have so many components, Greg. Now, the part I was very unfamiliar with, that it starts as young in fourth grade, identifying kids who could use a little extra support.
Right.
And how do you identify them, from the teachers, or do the parents apply to you, or how does that work?
Well, Chapel Hill schools are very fortunate that we have a social worker in every school. And the social worker is our liaison to the school. And so they lead a team, probably made up of some teachers, some administrators, a counselor from the school building, and they identify the students that they think would be good candidates for Blue Ribbon. And what they're looking for are kids who have three strengths. The first is that they have some form of untapped potential that a mentor can help them develop. So that's the hook. You know, what's special about that kid that a mentor would love?
Yeah.
The second strength is that there's a kid who seeks out adult attention. They have to want to spend time with a mentor.
Yeah.
Some kids, they'd just rather be with their family or with their peers, and that's just not the right student for us.
Yeah.
And then the third strength is that the family has to be willing to work with the mentor on school advocacy. So our mentors and our parents are trained to, like, go to a parent-teacher conference together, for instance. And so if the students and their families have those three strengths, then we consider them qualified for Blue Ribbon.
So the part that I really like is, as a parent who raised five kids, and a portion of that time was as a single parent, and it's so, so, so difficult, financially, emotionally, every other way. It sounds like you give some support and help to the parents in their parenting and how to be an advocate.
Absolutely. So all of our mentors, as well as all of our parents and the students even, go through an orientation process where they learn about the program and our expectations, and we teach them about how to do school advocacy together, how to go
that
to a parent-teacher conference.
That's so important, because so many parents, it's hard. You know, we don't grow up knowing that skill. And for a lot of us, it's a little intimidating, especially if we're worried if our kid isn't doing well, to, you know, feeling a little embarrassed and to speak to the teacher.
Exactly.
And of course, if they start saying things and don't seem very supportive of our kid, we get defensive. I mean, it's very hard to know how to do that effectively. I just didn't know that you did that. That's great.
And you can imagine maybe a parent who's a little intimidated, how helpful it would be to have a mentor going with them so they feel more comfortable.
Yes.
Maybe Laverne could tell you something about her relationship with her mentee's mother. They have a great relationship.
Well, we always talk. It's very important to communicate with the parents. And in our mentor training, we're trained to help as much as we can, but not overtake or take over.
Yes.
And sometimes us mothers who being in the nurturing role, sometimes we can get walked so close to the edge.
I understand
but
that.
But I learned through this training not to get close to the edge. And so
okay.
I always have the parent make the final decision. I can suggest things.
Okay, you can suggest.
Yes, I can suggest things to see what they think about it, but the ultimate decision is always the parent, and I'm going to always respect what my parent wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as us getting along, we get along beautifully. We do things together. When there's parent-teacher conference, we communicate. She'll call me going, well, there's a parent-teacher conference on this day. Can you make it? And I say, yes, I put it on my calendar. We meet there, and we go through the students' report cards. They allow me to have copies of the report cards. I'm usually at every school function, although I missed the Smith dance the other week.
But a good one to miss.
But I did hear about that. But it's just really a good relationship, you know. I've eaten dinner over there with them before, and, you know, we've all went out to dinner. So it's just...
Laverne, it sounds like such a big commitment. How often, typically, do you meet with your mentee?
I've been meeting with my mentee once a week from the beginning. The only brief little departure we had was when I had surgery and I was in recovery for about 3 weeks, but I picked right up, and
And is that typical for the mentors to try to make it once a week? Is there a guideline? What would be expected of you? Because some of our listeners, I'm hoping, are going to get so thrilled and so inspired by what you're telling us that your phone's going to be ringing and they're going to say, I want to do that. I want to make a difference in a child's life, because it sounds like it makes a huge, huge difference.
It does. And I was under the impression that, you know, just meeting this kid, you know, she's a little girl. What can I possibly offer this little girl?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, she can't get, why would she want to connect with almost a 50-year-old woman, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes a difference.
Because they had, she has you one-on-one. Just you.
Yeah, and I'm just there. She knows that Miss Laverne is right there. All I have to do is call Miss Laverne. And,
yeah,
you know, she's, Miss Laverne is just me and Miss Laverne. And she really enjoys that. And I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, with adult kids, you know, you really have nothing to do. And just to be able to share it, just spill some love on somebody else, and they spill it back, and it's just really an awesome feeling.
So is that a guideline, not that one has to do it as a mentor, but is that a guideline, the hope that you'll do it about once a week and to have that kind of continuity?
Yeah, the expectation at Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate is that our volunteers would see their mentee once a week for at least two hours. Our average mentor spends 3 to 4 hours per week with the student, but you know, just one activity, maybe picking them up, taking them someplace, taking them home, having over for dinner at your house, whatever it may be. But the great thing about this role as a volunteer role is that being a Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate gives you a total flexibility. You can do this in the evening, weekend, after school, anytime that works for you and the student's family, you can do it. And you can change it every week. So if you're somebody with a flexible schedule, you can make this work.
Yeah. So I just wanted to find out what the guideline is, because I'm hoping that that we'll get some volunteers from the program.
You mentioned about the phone jumping off the hook. Did you give out the phone number?
We're going to get to that, Dick. Thank you for the reminder. And the other reminder we always forget to say to our listeners, please have a pen or pencil and paper ready, because we always try to let you know how to get more information and how to follow up with what happens or what you find out about in the program. So we'll do that right now and do it again at the end. So Greg Meyer, our guest today, can you tell us what the phone number or the email or...
Absolutely. You can find out more information about Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate online at blueribbonmentors.org or at facebook.com/blueribbon. And if you want to call us, you can call us at 918-2170. And you can ask for me, Greg Meyer, or you can ask for Sophia Pitts. And either one of us will be able to help you become a new mentor. That would be fantastic.
And what if a parent is listening whose child has not been recommended by the team at the school, but the parent feels that their child would really benefit from this? Can a parent just call on their own?
So about 50% of the students that we have referred to the program come because the parent requested that referral.
Okay.
So they can. If they called us, we'd put them in touch with the social worker at their school, or they can contact them directly. But that was the case with Laverne's mentee, that her mom approached me and approached the social worker at the school and said, I know about this program and I'd like for my daughter to be in the program. The only restriction with the mentoring program is that the kids have to be in fourth grade when they're referred. That's the only age at which we take students into the program. If the kid's older, we can't have high school students in our Youth Leadership Institute. That's open to any high school student.
Oh, okay. So the restrictions are for under high school age, under ninth grade, they have to be as young as fourth grade. They can't come in fifth or sixth.
Correct.
Or seventh. So fourth grade, and then if they haven't been in from a young age, when they get in high school in ninth grade, they can enter. That's another entry point to be in the youth leadership.
Correct.
Group. Okay. Okay. Well, that's important to know. I had a thought, and it just slipped out of my head. So you tell me something else. Tell me the different components of the program. Are there something that you haven't mentioned yet?
Sure. Well, Blue Ribbon has 8 components. It's a lot, but I'll try and make it manageable for you. What we've really talked about so far is the core of the program, which is the mentoring, advocacy, and family involvement. And that's what Laverne's describing about working with her mentee and her mentee's mother to have a supportive relationship where they're doing fun activities as well as doing the school advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we get to know, our staff gets to know every student and every family over time. And as we do that, we try and build on that student's strengths and help them develop their potential. And we do that with four additional components. We have academic support, including tutoring for all of our students.
Okay.
We have social and cultural enrichment activities. So we send our kids to summer camps. We sponsor activities for them. We have tickets to coming up to the Carolina Railhawks soccer game. We have tickets to see the Parchment Hour at Playmakers. We, you know, opportunities that these kids might not otherwise have.
Yeah.
And then the next component is college and career exposure. So all of our mentors and students visit colleges, and we have a curriculum that we have from parents and mentors to help them when their child is in high school to walk through that process of what does it take to get your child into college so that they have all the resources that they need. And then we have our leadership development component, and that's the Youth Leadership Institute that I discussed, where we're training these students in leadership. One of the beautiful things about the leadership work is, you know, all of our students have been the recipients of service. But we don't want them always to be on the receiving end. We want to turn that dynamic around. We want our kids to become providers. We want them to become, someone who's a support to the community. And so when they get into our leadership model, we're turning the tables and showing them that you don't always have to be on the receiving end. It's very powerful. The final component that we have.
And to see yourself in such a different role.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if you do that, if you go to Atlanta and you provide service in a community that's impoverished but different than the community that you grew up in, then you see yourself as someone who really is able to give back.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
That is.
The final component that we have, which is the other one that we rely on the community for, is we have a community-sponsored scholarship for our students. So for every one of our students, when they come into the program in fourth grade, the very first time that we meet with them, we tell them that we are promising you can go to college because we have a college scholarship set up for you right now. And so every one of our students, when they graduate from high school, gets that scholarship to go on to college.
Oh, this is so amazing. I mean, and the other thing is the tutoring, the support and encouragement of that one-on-one to give the child that undivided attention that it's so hard for kids to get. But the tutoring, if you're having a trouble with math or reading,
exactly,
or whatever. But then to know that there's hope, because it's, you know, it's very expensive and very. So how did you work? Who invented this program? How did this get started?
Well, the program started in 1995. I came in 1998. I've been the coordinator for 13 years.
Oh my gosh, this is like a life.
I love my job.
Yeah.
I can do it for a long time.
Yeah,
it's great.
I can tell. It shows.
But the program, the credit for launching the program, it goes to a lot of people, but I'd give two people most of the credit. First of all, Dr. Neil Peterson. It was really his vision and his leadership of the Blue Ribbon Task Force in 1993. And the recommendations of that task force to start a mentoring program.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pam Bailey, along with a committee of other community people, really came up with the core design of why this would be a school-based mentor advocate program rather than more of a traditional social event type mentoring program.
Mm.
And then when I came in 1998, that's when we really started to develop more of the pieces that fit together around that mentor-advocate relationship.
So you were helpful then in really refining and expanding deepening.
It's grown a lot. When I came in 1998, we had 23 students, and I was a half-time employee, and we had a $10,000 budget. So at this point, we have 110 students in the mentoring program. And 40 students who have graduated and gone on to college. And we have another 100 students, actually more than 100 other students in the youth leadership program, 4 full-time staff, 2 AmeriCorps members, 2 social work interns. So it's a lot bigger now than it was 13 years ago.
Oh, my gosh. You must all feel so good about it. I mean, that's amazing. I did not realize. And so you can always learn more. I thought I knew a fair amount about it, but boy.
Well, this is an amazing community. You know, there's so many incredible people and resources in this community, and Blue Ribbon is a wonderful example of a schools community partnership. Our budget comes 40% from the school system, but 60% from private sources. And the scholarships that we have from students are 100% from private sources. So this community really shows that it invests in its children's education.
Yeah.
In most communities, well, really, there's no other community that has a program like this, you know? So
really? That's the other thing I was I knew there was something earlier on. I was trying to think, are we unique? And how many communities have, maybe not exactly like this, but something like this?
There are very few communities that have a program that has the longitudinal focus that we have and that has the partnership between the school system and the community. There are certainly other mentoring programs that are fantastic mentoring programs, and including in this community, there are some great mentoring programs. Blue Ribbon is just a little unique because of the way that we're set up. And, you know, with all of our, with our hundreds of volunteers and our hundreds of donors, we couldn't do this without the community. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, for every volunteer we get, we can guarantee another student goes to college.
Wow.
And in this community, we're capable of making that difference for kids. It's great.
So, you know, to ask like a really practical question, in this times of economic recession where there's so much cutback and everything, has the school still kept its commitment to this program?
The school district has been fantastic. Let me praise the school board and the district administration that they have protected us from budget cuts and shown us that they value the work that we're doing and what we do for the students. We have lost some private funding, and private money's gotten harder. We actually lost about 95% of our funding comes from the Chapel Hill community in one way or another. But we did lose our only federal funding, which was only $13,000. But in the federal budget compromise, unfortunately, they got rid of the National Learn and Serve program, which supports service learning activities for youth, which probably wasn't a very good budget decision in my book.
No.
But we'll be able to survive that. And then the other area is that our scholarship giving, the private giving to our scholarship fund, has been down about 30% since the recession started. And every nonprofit is down these days, so I'm not surprised with that. But, of course, we'd love to have more people give to our scholarship fund, because then we could give the students a larger scholarship when they go away to college.
Yeah. So in these hard times, it affects everybody and everything, but that you still are very viable, and even with some cuts from private funding, the schools has still kept a strong commitment, and I'm really glad to hear that.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, in our program, we do a lot of protesting and pointing out all the problems, and it's just very heartening. We got to do more of this, Dick. To hear the wonderful stuff, because you need that, too, to keep the joy and hope and the inspiration going, and this is just the antidote to despair that I needed.
Well, I always tell people, if you're on Facebook, you should become friends with Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate, because I can guarantee you that we're going to put some piece of good news on our Facebook page every day, so you can always hear something good, something positive that's going on in Blue Ribbon.
So listeners, hear that. If you're having a dark day, which many of us have these dark times, go to your Facebook and go to Blue Ribbon Advocate on Facebook,
yeah.
and you will find that lift that you need to know that good things are happening, that this community, in spite of some things that we may not appreciate in it, there are some wonderful things, and that is what we always need to hear, and we want to increase that, and I hope anybody is listening. I'm going to give that number again. If you want to either volunteer or talk to either as a volunteer or to make a donation.
Absolutely.
To call Greg or Sophia at 918-2170. And, of course, that's 919-918-2170. And I think we're just, I could tell, we're going to have a little station break. We can all catch our breath for a minute. And Dick, I'll turn it over to you and catch my breath.
Yes, this is Wilf's wake-up call. Also known as Connect the Dots, and we just connected a not real nice one today.
Yes.
So happy to hear about the Blue Ribbon Mentors. It's really been nice.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, it's great.
We're not finished, but we're going to take a little break right now.
Okay. So we're going to recognize our long-term, very kind and very faithful underwriters, Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in downtown Chapel Hill. Tell us about them.
Oh, okay. My part is to say that this is a bookstore that's going to have books that you probably, most likely, are not going to find in the big box bookstores. There's a lot of books on progressive politics, particularly, and also on culture. But more than that, it's a bookstore, and it's really a community resource. It's a place to go and hang out. It's a place to go and find out what's happening in the community, particularly the progressive community. And it's also a place you can get the best bumper stickers in town. You can look at my car and know that's true. And they'll have flyers about all the wonderful upcoming things, of which I want to mention one thing that I think I told you all last week, that the Raging Grannies, of which I am a proud member, are being re-inspired also. And we are mature women who sing politically satirical lyrics to old-timey music, and we are very colorful, flowery clothes and hats and everything. And we're going to be singing this Saturday at, they're having a 350 conference and festival. 350 is the environment. It's at not to get more than 350 parts per million of carbon.
CO2.
Thank you, Dick. Dick is my scientific advisor. I'm a little hazy on some of this. Anyhow, it's going to be a wonderful festival for kids. It's a great thing to bring your mentees to. It's going to be in Durham at Central Park at 2 o'clock. May they have wonderful weather. And, of course, they're going to have all kinds of music and games and information. And the Raging Grannies are going to sing some terrific songs. So that's one thing I wanted to let you know. This Saturday, and also later this Saturday, you can go to both, because I'm going to go to both. There's going to be a fundraiser for the Hannah Ruth Foundation. And Hannah Ruth is named after Lori Clark, who's in the Blue staff member in the Blue Mentor Program. It's named after her two grandmothers, Hannah and Ruth. And she started this foundation in their honor a year or two ago. And they're celebrating their first year, I think. It took a while to get it up and running. And they're going to be at the Hargraves Community Center this Saturday also at 4 p.m. So the grannies, go hear the grannies and go to the festival in Durham if you have that much energy. I'm going to try to have that much energy and come rushing back here, or slowly coming back here, to Hargraves Community Center at 4 o'clock. And they are, and what they do, they're a local nonprofit organization, and they see their mission as trying to give that extra support to two vulnerable populations, seniors, of which I am one also, and to kids. And so they try to do really nice things and supportive things.
Well, you should ask Laverne, because she's on the board. She's on the Hannah Ruth
board. Laverne, you're on the Hannah Ruth board.
I am the chairman of the board.
Oh, Laverne, well, you came to my, I'm in a senior residence now, the Manley Estates, and y'all came and had a pamper us Saturday there.
Did I do your feet?
Yes, you did my feet.
They're still happy. Yes.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have two complimentary tickets that I will be happy to leave with you to attend if you don't already have any.
Yes. Well, Lori Clark's mom was going to give me one, but I'll be happy to take it right now. That's wonderful. So they're also going to have a hat fashion show. And so it's called Hats Off to Hannah Ruth. So wear your favorite hat. So that is a nice connection, yeah. Laverne.
All the grannies can wear their hats.
And the grannies will come with their hats on. Yes, we better bring our hats. Okay, is there any other, do you want to mention about the nuclear tour? But that's coming up a little later.
Right.
We'll wait on that.
Yeah, I was going to mention that this is WCOM-FM, I'm sorry, WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro FM radio, 100 watts of screaming power.
And screaming power.
Right. And streaming power.
And streaming power.
Yeah, if you're having any problems and you want to get us at home very nicely, you can go to the website wcomfm.org. And click on the button that says Listen Live, and you can hear whatever happens to be on the air. And we certainly have a lot of good selections. This is Triangle WILF. That's WILPF, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Peace and Freedom.
And you can go to our website, triangle.wilpf.org, and get information about what we're up to and find most of the of radio shows that we stashed away in our radio archive. We're running a couple of weeks late getting them in there sometimes, but it's mostly up to date.
And they're usually pretty timeless topics that are ongoing. We just recently had a terrific one on fracking, which is a huge issue that's facing our state. So, yes, and I'm glad that we didn't forget ourselves, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, our sisterhood and brotherhood that keeps us going. And so I want to get back and sort of wrap up a little bit with Greg and Laverne. Laverne, so we have this connection, sister. And that's really nice. Yeah, I love when you can find these connections with people. So I probably will see you there on Saturday, and maybe you'll be popping.
I'll be there.
Yeah, great. Well, it'll be wonderful to see both of you again. So, okay, we've been having this wonderful information about the Blue Ribbon Mentoring Program that is larger and longer and bigger and more wonderful than we all, or I even knew, and I'm so glad we're getting all this great information. So we'll have about another 5 minutes, and then we have another guest that we're going to switch topics. So in wrapping up, what are some things that you want to be sure that people remember or that you want to say that you didn't get a chance to say?
I'd love it if Laverne would just tell you a little bit about some of the things that she's done with her mentee.
I'd love that, Laverne.
We've done quite a few things. We spend time at parks, and I really realized when we first started our relationship, this kid would run like the wind. And I took her out to the park, and she was all over the place, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to lose this kid. But, I mean, the YMCA, Greg, the Blue Ribbon, has set up a place that we can go swimming. So we can swim for free.
Oh, that's great.
I think we can go out to Metamont, too, but I've never been out there yet. And she loves to swim. It's just lots of fun activities. When I first became a mentor, I organized, they had given us a list of all the fourth graders. So I took this list and emailed all the fourth graders, and we had this big shindig at the farm for all the fourth graders. So we had a great time, and I got to meet some other mentors, you know, outside of our little mentoring ring.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to encourage people to really think about trying to give back, because it's just really important. You really don't know how much of a difference you make. And I really didn't understand the magnitude of the program until I actually was driving them. I was their bus driver. So I drove them on service trips, and I watched them do all these different activities. We went to Mississippi. I drove an activity bus with them to Mississippi.
You are kidding.
And it was just phenomenal. We went down to, where did we go?
Gulfport. Right after, just a few months after Hurricane Katrina.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was just, and just seeing them give back. And so, you know, although I was a bus driver, but I became the sandwich maker, or making sure they ate food when they came back. I'm like, I have to make sure my Chapel Hill people eat, you know. So I was in the kitchen. So the people were happy. Our group was happy. But that just really inspired me the more to become a mentor, because even after all that, I mean, I still drive buses. If they need me, they know they can draft Laverne to drive a bus, you know. But even after all of that and seeing all of that, to actually come in and help somebody from the beginning, a fourth grader, and just to see them go all the way up through high school and be there for them.
So when you're a mentor, you make a commitment for a year, but it's hope that you will continue on, or do you make a commitment for longer? What is the expectation if somebody's interested in thinking about doing this?
The expectation is to give as much as you can. They don't try to overburden you, but the thing of it is, you know, I look at it from my point of view. The program has given so much to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm connected to forever, even if it's just driving a bus, mm-hmm. or even packing sandwiches for them, or mm-hmm. making a donation to the program. Mm-hmm. Every little bit makes a difference in some child's life.
So with your child, though, that you've been with your child how long now?
She's a sixth grader, so 2 years.
2 years. So the hope, if things continue on, that you'll just keep on with her, right?
The mentors make a 2-year commitment initially.
Okay.
But 90% of our relationships last beyond that 2 years.
It sounds like.
And 60% of our students have graduated high school with the same mentor they started with in fourth grade.
Oh.
And so you know those relationships then become lifelong relationships.
I'm gonna cry.
If there's a kid who's, I mean, this is a realistic case, but you know, you have a high school student who has a rough life and they're on the edge of dropping out. But if you have that mentor that's been with you since you're in fourth grade mm-hmm. and now you're 17 years old and you're not getting the support that you need from home, the reason why our students don't drop out is because they don't want to disappoint their mentor. So I can't say it enough. If I can get another volunteer, I can send another student to college. That is all that it takes, is one more volunteer.
And I look at my kids, Eric and Eugenia. My son got married. Greg was at the wedding. You know, Lori was at the wedding. They were at the wedding. We all took a group picture of all of us as Blue Ribbon people, even Eric's friend Kevin Cruz, who Dr. Peterson was his mentor, he was in the wedding. You know, so you form these relationships that are just not easily broken. And I know for my family, I know Greg will always be a part of my kid's life. He was there when my son graduated from high school. He was there when he graduated from college. He was there at his wedding. He wasn't there when EJ, I got a grandson. He wasn't there when EJ was born. But almost.
But almost.
I know Eric knows that Greg is only a phone call away. My daughter knows that Lori Clark, she has eaten a lot of meals over their house. She's been out there to the Blue Ribbon trailer. These people are there for you all the way.
Well, you know, so many people talk about the loss of community and longing for community. And in listening to you, this program is a community. You talked about your mentor ring. I guess some of you get together or share things, support
Absolutely.
Each other in
Absolutely.
Being mentors. So this is not just becoming a mentor for a year. This is becoming part of such a vibrant, loving community of people who care about kids, and it sounds like support and love each other. And that's hard to get.
No, it's amazing.
I think...
You know, in the spirit of Wilf, one of the great things about Blue Ribbon is that we knit together the social fabric of Chapel Hill and Carrboro, because we have mentors and students and families who otherwise wouldn't know each other at all because they're separated by geography or class or race or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But these people get to know each other and love one another and develop lifelong relationships. And, you know, there's so many examples of, even after the child goes off to college and becomes an adult, of the mentor and the parent still being friends and still relying upon one another. And just as Laverna said, I mean, she's spoken very nicely about how her kids have benefited, but she also said, you know, that she's gotten so much out of the mentoring. And that's what our mentors say. They say they benefit as much from the program as the kids do, and how enriching it has been to have the family that they're mentoring become a part of their life. It's just beautiful to see the way it impacts the whole community.
Well, this has just been so much more even than I thought it would be. I knew it was going to be good. I did know that. But this is so much more, and I want to thank both of you so much for coming and sharing this, I just have to use the word inspiring, but you know, it's a hackneyed word, but that's the best word I can think of. I want to give this number again, and maybe Greg, you give the number and tell also the
sure. Absolutely. We'd love to have anyone who's interested in learning more, check us out at blueribbonmentors.org or call us at 918-2170. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and all those other places. But blueribbonmentors.org has tons of information about how you can get involved.
Wow. Well, thank you again. It's been great.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. And
yes, thank you for coming.
Yeah. And if there's anything coming up and you want to come on even for a short time and tell us about some event you're having
great.
Or whatever, you're always welcome. And you're welcome to stay. We're going to go to our next guest, Harry Phillips. But the rain is pouring out there. I just want to let you know, if you do need to leave, you need to push the green button to get out the door. But you're welcome to stay. And we're going to invite Harry to come on over and get in the hot seat.
Thank you.
Thank
good luck,
you
Harry.
So much.
Yes,
thank you
what
so much.
What a wonderful program.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yeah.
Terrific.
I'll see.
Thanks a lot. All right.
Good to meet you. Good to meet you.
Good to see
you.
Yeah,
good to see you.
Yeah.
Anna Ruth
Von Ritz. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, well, we're saying goodbye to Greg Meyer, who's the coordinator for the program, and Laverne Manzano, who is a mentor, and just a fabulous woman, Dick. Isn't she just
yes.
beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
So this is what's so wonderful about doing this radio show. We meet the best people, don't we? And
yeah.
Now we've got another good one. Harry, hi. It's going to be hard to follow that one, isn't it?
It will indeed, Lori, yeah.
I feel for you, dear. But we'll get to... Does it sound okay, Dick? Can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, Harry, you want to tell us a little bit about who you were, like what group you're with, or groups?
Yeah, well, thanks, Lori. And first, Lori and Dick, thanks so much, guys, for having me on the program. It's an honor to be here, So thanks for that. I think the first thing I'll do when I leave here tonight is go online and sign up to be a mentor with Blue Ribbon Mentors.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, terrific. Yeah. You know, I just recently left a long teaching career, and I miss working with kids a lot. Not that I'm not busy and overcommitted now, but I miss that one-on-one connection, and this might be a really good thing to pursue. So... as to who I am,
So you've been a teacher?
I have been a teacher for a long time.
Is this around here? Or?
Some 22 years. Well, I began my teaching career at Southern Durham High School for a couple of years, and then recently retired from a 15-year teaching career at Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte.
Oh,
I was an
wonderful.
English teacher. Yeah.
I have a very soft spot for teachers. My sister was a teacher for 37 years. My son just retired also 2 years ago from teaching in the Durham school system for 30 years. So my mother was a teacher for a year or two up in Canada in one of those one-room schoolhouses in the very far north of Nova Scotia. And so yeah, teaching the greatest love and respect for teachers. And I'm so glad to know that about you, Harry. You're a new friend to me.
Well, thank you, Laurie. Thanks. There's nothing quite like the classroom. It's the most challenging environment there is. It's also deeply rewarding. But it was a great career, and I miss it a lot.
Because one of the things that just infuriates me now for a long time where teachers were, everyone said, well, they're poorly paid, but they had this great respect. And now certain elements in our country are demonizing teachers. And
all of a sudden, they're not poorly paid, they're overpaid.
Overpaid, and firemen and policemen. And we won't, that's another program. But anyhow, we're giving Harry just a little bit of time today to just briefly... And we want you to come on next week and go into more depth I'm looking at the window at that weather. Briefly tell us a little bit about what the tar sand issue is, and a little bit about what was the other thing? Oh, about yes, the merger of Progress Energy and Duke Power.
Yeah, sure, Laurie. Well, I returned a couple of weeks ago from 3 days in Washington, D.C. to participate in the tar sands pipeline protest. And what that's about is oil companies in Alberta, in southern Alberta,
Canada,
have applied to our government for permission to construct a 1,700-mile oil pipeline that will run from Alberta down to Port Arthur, Texas, and the oil refineries down there.
Through eight states, I think you said?
I think it's six large Midwestern and far western states. Yeah, yeah. And so many, many, not only in the progressive community, but folks concerned with our environmental health and ecological justice were drawn to the events in D.C. to speak up and to register their concern and complaint about this proposal. This is a pipeline that will run some 1,700 miles. And it will carry a refined oil. It's a rough crude. It is mined in the tar sands area of Alberta, an area of about 34,000 square miles, larger than England.
It's a brutal process.
It is a brutal, dirty process that involves clear cutting of native vegetation of the boreal forest in Alberta province. It will, because the oil has to be refined and processed heavily and extensively, it will add to air pollution. It will produce a lot of CO2 and greenhouse gases. It will dirty the air. It will dirty the land. It will dirty the water. It will disrupt the First Nations people's culture in Alberta. Additionally, the larger picture here is that it will continue our fossil fuel dependence on oil for potentially as long as another century. The oil reserves in the tar sands are extensive, and there is enough crude there to service our country's needs for at least the next 100 years. Many at the protests in D.C., which were every day for some 2 weeks from August 20th to September 3rd, want us to get off the dirty energy treadmill. Enough is enough. Climate change is reality. Fossil fuels, we know, dirty the air.
And Harry, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
I heard, is that true that about 1,000 people were arrested during those protests?
Yes,
Laurie. But you don't hear anything about that in the media.
Right. Well, more than 1,200 folks were arrested. More than 2,000 participated. And it's interesting that you really do have to hunt. You have to do extensive online searching to find current reporting on that tar sands protest. And that is by design. Big media, mainstream media, largely did not touch it. Although the New York Times did have a few relatively short pieces on it, the Washington Post did cover it. But you know, I get all my information from sources under the mainstream radar, largely from solveclimate.org, and I'll be glad to mention that and
yeah.
others in a few minutes. This is a unique situation where the president does not need to go through Congress to act on this proposal. He can
either yay or nay,
accept it or reject it on his own. Because the source of the issue originates beyond our borders, it's in Canada. So putting pressure on the president is our goal. That's the activist strategy at this point, too.
And he still has not made a decision.
He has not made a decision and likely will not until the end of this year. So we've got some 3 months to pressure the president. Secretary of State Clinton has organized some 8 public meetings, she's calling them, all situated in those 6 states in the center of the country that will be affected by the pipeline construction and operation, and that's where folks can have a chance to speak up, as well as organizing their own events. So let me just say a little bit more about what happened in Washington, D.C. Bill McKibben is the originator of these protests. Bill is also the founder of the 350.org movement that you mentioned a few minutes ago, and there's an event, of course, taking place Saturday in Durham Central Park from 2 until 5. And, you know, Bill views this proposal, should it be accepted, as an end game event.
What does that mean?
That means that the percentage of carbon dioxide being released into the atmosphere will push us over the tipping point, over the edge, and which means that we will not come back to anywhere close to 350 parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere.
Because we're already over the 350.
We're already at about 392,
yeah.
And this will push us significantly larger.
So it's very, it's very scary. I mean, we're talking about could be ultimately our survival.
James Hansen, who is probably the leading climatologist in the country, if not the world, basically said the same thing. His terminology was, if they go ahead with that mining of the tar sands, it's game over.
Right.
And you know, my term for it is the heat death of the planet.
Right. Dick, let me just respond a little bit to your important comment by Jim Hansen, who actually spoke here in Chapel Hill last winter. But you know, proposal was put before the House of Representatives in Washington last spring concerning climate change, and it was a proposal that was defeated 240-184. And in part, the proposal reads that climate change is occurring, is caused largely by human activities, and poses significant risks for public health and welfare. And the proposal was defeated by that 240-184 score, which underscores the deep skepticism in many parts of the country as to whether or not climate change really exists.
Well, it underscores the deep skepticism, but it also underscores the huge amount of money in legal bribery to members of Congress from oil companies and their like. So, you know, sometimes the people are ahead of most people want clean water, clean air, and our representatives don't carry out what we hope and wish for and obfuscate things. But I just looked at the time, and we're going to come back to this next week because we want to hear what happened in Washington. I think some of our friends got arrested. Were you one of the ones?
I was not arrested, Lori, no.
Was Lib? Hodgepi was who?
I'm not sure,
but I want to find out more next week. But I want, in our last few minutes, if you would just briefly lay out why we need to care about the merger of Progress Energy and Duke Power. Just a little bit about why we're against
it. Well, yesterday in Raleigh, Lori, there was the beginning of a four-day-long hearing, series of hearings over in Raleigh to assess the risks and benefits of the possibility of Duke Energy and our own Progress Energy merging. And some 25 people spoke, one in favor of the merger and 24 opposed. Much of the testimony was compelling. Folks were concerned that this was another instance where these big corporations were rolling over everyday people. The 2,000 plus people that these companies will lay off as a result of the merger will be issued severance packages that you and I will pay for. The cost of terminating those folks will be ours. It will be foisted onto the backs of ratepayers. So many people were concerned about that. Additionally, folks were concerned that Duke and Progress are not doing nearly what they could be doing in terms of generating energy from renewable sources. They are committed to nuclear. They just built our building, Cliffside, west of Charlotte, and they are committed to...
Which is a coal-fired...
To coal. Yeah, and this is an energy company that could be leading and could be demonstrating to our region, the country, mm-hmm. and the world that wind generation and energy generated by solar and geothermal... Is practical. We know that the technology
in this state,
is here.
Jim Hansen has statistics to show this state particularly could rely totally on solar and wind.
And wind, right. Well, it's been determined that coastal North Carolina is the best place to establish wind turbines on the entire East Coast. It is an ongoing thing. What people can do, if ever there was time for a letter writing campaign. It is now flooding local media with letters concerning both the tar sands and the merger is appropriate now.
And I think the merger is the more time critical, perhaps, the merger. So write to your local media and to our local...
write to the local media,
the
and you can simply
go
online to North Carolina Utilities Commission, and they will give you a way to communicate with them. You can do it via an email message, a phone call, or you can use snail mail. Either of those three will get the message across. But I think generating awareness and, you know, mm-hmm. the op-ed pages of our local papers are quite effective. So
mm-hmm. yeah, we're going to have to scram.
I know. We're going to go. Next week.
Next week we'll have some more of Harry.
Is going to be back on.
Right. And we'll connect some more dots.
And we will connect some more dots. But yes, this is Triangle WILPF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.